You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hi, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 111. Today's episode is all about books about New Orleans. If you caught up on Netflix and you want to spend some time reading instead, this one's for you. I'm recording in April of 2020, and even if you're listening years from now, I hope this will help you to get to know the city better, whether you're planning a trip or you just want to stay connected with New Orleans. The last show was all about how two local businesses worked together to shift from producing distilled spirits to hand sanitizer in just 4 days. I was joined by Sal Bivalacqua of 7-3 Distilling and Jess Bourgeois over at Lula Restaurant and Distillery. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. I certainly enjoyed the conversation with Sal and Jess, and I was just amazed at how quickly they transformed their businesses. A quick update before we jump into the books. A bunch of you have asked, so I'm recording this on April 20th, 2020. We're in the midst of day 800, it feels like, of the quarantine. We're doing all right. We're homeschooling, running my day job, running the podcast, getting used to the four of us being in the house all the time. Probably like many of you, it's been hard. Spring break was last week here in New Orleans, and instead of our beach trip, we hung out here at the house. The thing I think I enjoy the most are the hugs. You know, eight-year-olds still want to be with dad, and that's been really great. You know, but we're looking forward to New Orleans getting back to some semblance of whatever regular will be. This is what would be the first week of Jazz Fest, so we're going to enjoy it as best we can by listening to lots of great music online and locally. And I hope wherever you are, you're doing all right and finding some good in this really difficult time for everyone. Today's episode is sponsored by Liz Wood Realty. I mentioned last time that a couple of our sponsors have stepped back for the time being, and that's fine. We'll be here for them when they're ready to come back. But one of the most frequent questions Marie and I get asked about are related to moving to New Orleans. In fact, we get questions in the Facebook group. We get emails, texts. Every week we get questions about it. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you want to rent or purchase. New Orleans is a terrific city, but choosing the neighborhood that's the best fit for you can be overwhelming. It can be overwhelming for locals, much less for somebody moving here. Liz makes that process fun and easy. And the other thing I really like about Liz is not only does she do that and she helps you sort through it, her and her team, but once you become a member of the New Orleans community, you also become a member of Liz's community. And she does a great job bringing together people and keeping them together. Many of them are in our group. Many of them she meets up with when she, not during the virus, obviously, but normally. And she really is engaged and is a resource and becomes a friend for the people that she helps. Several members of our community, of our Beyond Bourbon Street community, have reached out to Liz and are thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. Again, as I mentioned, she does a great job kind of making things simple and approachable, and then she's somebody that you'll get to know and love and continue to be friends with once you move here. When you're ready to make the move to New Orleans, reach out to Liz at lizwoodrealty.com, and you can also go over to her website and join her email list so that you can keep up with what's going on in the city and be connected with a realtor here for when the time comes. And as I mentioned, our other sponsors, they'll come back when the situation with COVID-19 changes. In the meantime, please keep the old number 77 hotel and Two Chicks walking tours in your plans for when we do get through this, and know that as bad as it is, we will get through it. In the meantime, we're creating new ways to partner with local businesses, and more on that later, but let's get into the books. We've done 110 episodes, and I've talked to many authors. What I don't think I've done is give you book recommendations, and that's what I'll do today. Here's what this is not. It's not a top 10 list. It's not a comprehensive list. It's just a list of very good books about New Orleans across several categories, and books that I like and think that you'll like as well. I intentionally left some categories out, like Katrina and vampires, and more on that as we go. For some reason, this topic makes me nervous. I think mostly because I'm not good about retention of all the details, and also I know a lot of authors. So no matter what I talk about today, I have a list of nearly 100 in front of me. We're going to talk about a dozen or 15 or so. But that means I'm going to leave out an awful lot of people and an awful lot of good books. So I think in part that's why I've kind of put this one off. But this seems like a good time. Lots of people are home. Lots of people are looking for things to read and distractions. So let's see how it goes. This might be a recurring sub-series or it might be a one and done. You'll have to let me know. Anyway, the place where I want to start is the beginning. I have a couple of books about the history and the founding of the city of New Orleans. Three that I want to talk about today. The first is called The World That Made New Orleans, From Spanish Silver to Congo Square, and it's by Ned Sublett. The second is Bienville's Dilemma, A Historical Geography of New Orleans by Richard Campanella. Richard's been on the podcast with me several times, and one of them was to talk about this specific book. We'll put links to it and to all the books that we talk about today in the show notes, which will be over at beyondbourbonst.com/111. But the third book in this grouping is The Accidental City, Improvising New Orleans by Lawrence Powell. So all three are, I would say, on the scholarly side. They all have similarities, but I like them as a trio, and I'll kind of walk you through that a little bit in just a moment. They are all fairly lengthy reads, and at times I think each of them is a little bit dense, but that's because they're packing in so much history. The reason I chose these three and chose to group them together is I think that when you take them together, you can take them individually and you get a good sense of the city. But when you take them together, you get three different looks at sort of the same history. And that to me is pretty interesting. The World That Makes New Orleans, the first book by Ned Sublett, he talks in great detail about the colonization of the area. But the part that really grabs me are his discussions of slavery and music in their role in New Orleans from the very beginning. And it's a pretty short timeline if you think about the drum circles of the enslaved in Congo Square to jazz to the current music scene in New Orleans. And I think that, not I think, Ned does a really good job of lacing those together. He has another book about Cuba and Saint Domingue. But this one, he really just tries to tell the story through that lens. So while it's historical and kind of goes through the colonization and the French and the Spanish and the Native American Indians, he spends a lot of time about talking about slavery. And he does just this great job of weaving the narrative of New Orleans through the lens of music. It really hit me, too, as I was thinking about this topic, that I'm recording this in, again, what would have been the first week of Jazz Fest 2020. And the very first Jazz Fest in 1970, New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, was held in Congo Square, which is inside of Armstrong Park. So that was on my mind a little bit. This is a book I often recommend when people maybe aren't from here and want to get a history of New Orleans. The second book, so if Ned Sublett's book uses music as its backbone, Richard Campanella uses geography. And, you know, if you've heard Richard speak, that's not surprising at all. Richard is a geographer. But geography makes for a great lens into how and why New Orleans is where it is. And again, he wrote a whole book, Bienville's Dilemma, which really has to do in large part with why here. You're at least back then, you were 95 miles from the Gulf of Mexico upriver. It seemed inconvenient, right, in many regards. But as you listen to Richard and as you read Richard's book and talk about the geography, you understand why Bienville and Iberville chose it. The reason, you know, he talks about why the French selected the site. And what strikes me about the book, and I reread it again recently, is that it also supports the reasons why it was important to come back after Katrina. And in a real oversimplification, New Orleans is still an artery that connects the interior of the country with the rest of the world, especially when it comes to trade. That was in many respects more so in the late, certainly in the 1700s, when Bienville came and they founded New Orleans, they were looking to establish trade routes. But by the early 1800s, New Orleans was one of the biggest cities and one of the largest, at one time, the largest port in the United States. Even today, it's a top 4 or 5 port and is so connected to the rest of the world and to the interior of the country. That's also what made it important after Katrina. And I think as we are here today in COVID-19 and we see the breakdown of the infrastructure of our supply chain, once again, New Orleans plays a big part in that. So when Richard talks about Bienville's dilemma and that so much of it is focused on geography, it's interesting to me that 300 years later, we still face the same thing. I've interviewed Richard 3 times. Again, I'll put links to those episodes in the show notes. And every time I do, I not only learn things, but I learn to appreciate my city in a different way, through a different perspective. And so, again, if Ned's book kind of used music as the background or the backbone, Richard's uses geography and his love and knowledge of geography. And when you pair those two together, again, while there's a lot of overlap in the two books, you get to see two different perspectives and they mesh well. And then you get to the third book in this grouping, and that's The Accidental City, The Improvising of New Orleans by Lawrence Powell. And I think that this one rounds out the trio well. His book, Powell's book, focuses a bit more on commerce for its structure. And there's lots of stories of intrigue. There's this talk about the search for riches, which was the backbone of at least the selling point of the companies once Bienville came and claimed this land for France. There was there was this whole thing about John Law, and this was a place that had tons of riches in the ground. Many, many, many years later, of course, it had riches other than what they realized. It wasn't this fertile ground in the way that they thought to grow indigo or even cotton really close to the city. But obviously, years and years later, sugarcane and then oil and again, the fact of being a port. But he talks about this search for riches and this promised land and then these promises broken to these people that moved across the world to come chasing their dreams. This one is definitely scholarly at times, but again, I think all three are. The other thing is that this one, unlike the other two, it starts with the founding of New Orleans, and it ends with the War of 1812, or right around the War of 1812 and the Battle of New Orleans in 1815. Again, they're all relatively long books, and I think some people would characterize each of them as academic, but when you take them together, you could just pick one and get a good sense of the history of New Orleans, but I really like the combination of the geography and the commerce and the music. And when you take these, I think these three together do a great job. So that's 3 choices, all, again, fairly long reads, but if you want to really get into the history and the founding of the city, I think this trio is a good place to start. I am enjoying a Dorada beer from Port Orleans Brewing here in New Orleans. It's their sort of Mexican-style, Corona-style beer, if you will, and I thought that was appropriate. Number 4 on my list, I put into a category by itself called Myth-Busting. And this one is Bourbon Street, A History, again by Richard Campanella. And again, we did an episode on it. But what I like about this is that Richard kind of decided to explore the history of this street that tourists love and come and talk about and that locals love to say that we hate. And the reality is, when you really dig in, one, the Bourbon Street you picture today wasn't the Bourbon Street 100 years ago or 70 years ago or maybe even 50 years ago. It also is very residential once you cross sort of behind St. Louis Cathedral and you walk towards Esplanade Avenue. It's so commercial and seedy as you get close to Canal Street. But when you go in that other direction, it's a neighborhood. And you're getting into a part of the community that's been a neighborhood for a very, very long time. And so what I like about this book, again, is it kind of bursts the myth. Those of you that have listened for a long time know that the reason the podcast is called Beyond Bourbon Street is I wanted to dispel myths about New Orleans. I wanted to get beyond that idea that, oh, New Orleans is just a place where people come and get drunk on Bourbon Street and it's gross and disgusting and blah, blah, blah. And I wanted to share and explore with you all the facets that to me make this a wonderful city, make it a place that Marie and I have chosen to raise our children, and all the things that I know to be terrific about the city, and many of you know. And I think Richard's exploration of Bourbon Street does that about our most famous and in many ways our most polarizing street. Even today when I wander around the French Quarter, it's interesting when I have the time to take the time and walk from Canal Street and through the seedy part with the strip clubs, and then you get beyond that and there's some great restaurants. And again, you keep going, and once you get a block or two beyond kind of the halfway point, all of a sudden there's no businesses and it's all residential. And that is probably very much like it was 100-150 years ago and more, and some of the houses there, of course, date back further than that. So I think this is a really good one. If you sort of hear the word Bourbon Street or hear the words Bourbon Street and kind of roll your eyes, this book will open your eyes and make you think about and see Bourbon Street the next time you're here in a different way. I've been wanting during this sort of quarantine period to go take pictures and just experience it for myself. You've probably seen online the French Quarter's deserted in a way that it wasn't even during Katrina, because it didn't get much water during Katrina. And there's just some amazing shots. Lafitte's blacksmith shop closed up, all shuttered up. You just don't see that, and you don't ever really get to see it without a crowd of people around it. And so it's an interesting time, but it got me thinking about the book and that this is a good read. If you know the history of New Orleans, maybe you've read those others. Particularly if you're a local, you know, you probably share this sort of feeling or opinion about Bourbon Street, and this book is a good one. So give it a read or a listen. And again, I'll also put links to my episode with Richard about his book Beyond Bourbon Street, A History. Number five on my list, well, actually the next two, I put into a category that I called Death in New Orleans for two very different reasons. One, and again, as I was going through this first batch in this episode, many of these authors have been on my podcast, not all of them. And so that's probably a reason why they're on this list. They're books and they're authors that I appreciate and that I like. But this category we'll call Death in New Orleans. And the first is Stories from the St. Louis Cemeteries of New Orleans by Sally Asher. She was on the show. And the second is Tinderbox, The Untold Story of the Upstairs Lounge Fire and the Rise of Gay Liberation by Robert Fiesler. So first, Sally's book. Why do I love this book? You get a bit of history about why we bury our dead the way we do, above ground and in the crypts and that sort of thing. But the real treasure of Sally's book is that what you find is the stories of the lives of those people who are buried in our unique tombs. And there are many, many characters, some well-known, some not so well-known. She talks about Marie Laveau. She talks about that grave. She talks about Marigny, who, of course, the neighborhood is named after, the neighborhood just downriver from the French Quarter. But she talks about lots and lots of people in the three St. Louis cemeteries. And it's a wonderful, almost like mini biographies, but in some cases they're just a couple sentences, in other cases they're a couple pages. It's a wonderful way to gain some insight. And if you've been to New Orleans and been to the St. Louis cemeteries, it's a good way to kind of dive into the people that live there now, right? And that book, my maternal grandparents are buried in St. Louis number 3, which is the one on Esplanade Avenue, just off of Bayou St. John, in front of City Park. And even though I have spent a lot of time in that cemetery over the years, Sally's book pointed out several things and several graves there that I hadn't taken the time to go look at and really learn about. And so it's really sort of enhanced my experience when I go there. I feel like I know the neighbors, if you will, a little bit better. But it's a great read. It's an easy read, and there's lots of stories you can jump around. And to me, what the book did was, again, open my eyes to to a different insight on the cemeteries that I've spent some time in. But also, as you travel around New Orleans, after you've read the book, you know a little bit more of the story. So when you see a street name, or you're in a neighborhood, or you see a statue, then you get to know a little bit more of the story. And I think Sally just does a great job of storytelling and really making those people come alive, if you will. So the stories from the St. Louis Cemeteries of New Orleans, a great read. If the first few on my list were more academic, this is would be an easy read in an afternoon, particularly stuck home in quarantine. But it's also a good pocket guide. So if you wanted to, when you do plan your next trip, or if you're a local and the cemeteries open back up, or when they open back up, Sally's book is a good accompaniment to that. In a different but somewhat related angle, I've interviewed Bobby Fiesler about Tinderbox. For me, it's certainly one of the two or three most important stories I've told on the podcast, and certainly one of the most emotional. Tinderbox is about the worst attack on the LGBTQ community until the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting just a couple years ago. So in June 24th, 1973, what they think happened was someone who had gotten thrown out of the bar earlier and was disgruntled, basically threw a Molotov cocktail into a gay bar called the Upstairs Lounge. And many people died that day or in the subsequent days. And Tinderbox tells the story of that event and sort of sets it in time in terms of what New Orleans was like at that time, how the gay community was accepted and not accepted, and the lives of those men and women who died, were severely burned, lived, lost loved ones, and sort of the whole trail of what happened, not only that day, but afterwards, and the impact. I think it's one of the most important books about New Orleans. Bobby has won numerous awards for the book. He recently just did an article in the Huffington Post where he talked about he was really proud of that, and at the same time, the book really impacted his marriage in a negative way, in that he was traveling around and his partner, his husband, felt like, look, you know, you're putting the book ahead of us. And so the story of Tinderbox continues today in terms of its impact on them. At the same time, when he wrote this book, they were not New Orleanians, and in the year and a half or so since, they have moved to New Orleans, and they are New Orleanians now. The Upstairs Lounge fire is a story that a lot of people still today, when I mention it, don't know about it, or maybe know in passing. It was gruesome. It was an attack against the community. It's an important part of New Orleans history. It's not a, you know, it's a tragic part, but it's an important part. And I think that Bobby does, he tells the story in a way that is compassionate and insightful and leaves you really not only understanding what happened that day, but also a glimpse into the lives of the gay community at that time, and to some degree, the gay community today. Tinderbox is not an easy read in terms of it's super emotional, but it's such an important story. I would encourage you to give that a read sometime. Let's see, moving on. The next category is Mardi Gras Indians, and I only put one book here right now. That is The House of Dance and Feathers, a Museum by Ronald Lewis. And I'm sorry, I don't have my copy handy. I don't remember the name of the author or the people that kind of put it together, compiled it. But this one, so Ronald Lewis just passed away. He was not in great health, and then was one of the first people sort of known in New Orleans that died of the coronavirus. But the House of Dance and Feathers is this small museum behind Ronald's house in the Ninth Ward. And he came back after Katrina and got a little bit of help, a little bit of money, and rebuilt it. And it's not big, but you go into this little museum, you have to make an appointment, or you had to make an appointment with Ronald. I hope that his family is able to keep it up. And you would go in this little museum that, I don't know, is about the size of a mobile home, single-wide mobile home, but filled with memorabilia that talks not only about the Mardi Gras Indians, but talks about all these various cultures or subcultures in New Orleans and in the surrounding areas. He talks about, he has things from the Courier de Mardi Gras, the Cajun Mardi Gras. He has things, it interested me when I met Ronald for the first time to know that he was a member of some Cajun Mardi Gras organizations. He loved his Mardi Gras Indians and the Skull and Bones gangs. He was a member of a Jewish Mardi Gras or carnival organization. And the theme through it all is he just really cared about people and was really interested in preserving culture, not just his culture, but all cultures in New Orleans and all cultures related to the celebration of carnival and Mardi Gras. And the book, which is about the size of a workbook, again, it's called The House of Dance and Feathers, a Museum by Ronald Lewis. It's a great book. It's not a narrative, so you can sort of jump around, but it is the next best thing to visiting the museum. And now that Mr. Lewis has passed, it's a great way to sort of celebrate his life and his passion for Mardi Gras Indians. In fact, one of the early episodes I did, I think it was episode 13, it was about Mardi Gras Indians. It was based on conversations that I had with Ronald Lewis. And I'm really thankful that I did that. I wish I had recorded him then. But this book is a good sort of stepping stone for getting to know a little bit about the Mardi Gras Indian culture and also the second line culture in New Orleans. At the end, and I'll mention it now, there's two great places, there's several great bookstores in New Orleans, but there's a used bookstore called Blue Cypress, and that's a place that you might find a copy if it's out of print. I know if you're ordering online nationally, sometimes this is a book that's hard to find. I also recommend Octavia Books and Garden District Bookshop. So those three, between those three, you can probably find a copy. This is the book on my list that's probably the most difficult to find. Again, I can't find my copy. I think I loaned it to someone in my family. I'm not sure. Anyway, definitely a book worth checking out. I want a quick interlude and circle back. At the top of the show, I mentioned that we've created some new ways to work with local businesses. One of the positive things for me that this time has given me is that we've launched something called the Beyond Bourbon Street Preferred Partners Program. And this is where I partner with business owners that I like and I believe in. I appreciate the way they do business. And I think that they offer products or goods or services that would be a good match for you. I've wanted to do this for a long time. Sometimes it doesn't make sense for them to be on-air sponsors or I don't have space on air. But now this has given me an opportunity to talk about a couple of those. And so the partner program includes businesses like NOLA T-Shirt of the Month Club. If you've been following me on social media, you've noticed almost daily I've been posting pictures of drinking coffee in the morning, and I'm almost always wearing a shirt from NOLA T-Shirt of the Month Club. And another one of the businesses is Coast Roast Coffee. Again, Kevin has given me a couple mugs, so you'll see me drinking coffee out of those mugs in the morning. But those are just two businesses that are places I would send you and that I believe in. They offer discounts to our listeners, and you can find out more about them and other sponsors and partners as they come aboard at beyondbourbonst.com/111. Let's get back to the stacks of books, shall we? Let's see, and I'm fighting my voice at this point, but the next group are novels. And this could be, you know, you could do a whole podcast series on novels or just on this category. But there's two here that I wanted to mention. The first is We Cast a Shadow by Maurice Carlos Ruffin. This is the first novel on my list, and this is the first novel that Maurice has written. And it is terrific. It is, it's often referred to in reviews as a dystopian novel, a dystopia about a dystopian future. But when you boil it down, it's about a black family that's fairly well off. The central character is an attorney, is a lawyer. It's set in New Orleans, although I don't think he ever mentions New Orleans in the narrative of the book. And so the lead character, he wants what's best for his son, but he's conflicted about whether what he's doing for his son is really the best, and whether or not it's for him or it's for his son. And it's about blending in, and it has to do with this sort of struggle and how it fits. And Maurice wrote the book sort of with an eye towards his future of what things might look like. And one of the things, besides the fact that it's incredibly written and just sucks you in and draws you in and you feel like you are right there with the family, it doesn't feel so dystopian as we sit here in the midst of COVID-19 and some of the reality of our just political divisions across the country, the racism that's been brought to the surface, again, COVID-19 points out, particularly in a city like New Orleans, the disparity where 70% or so of the people that have passed away as a result of COVID-19 are African American. And so his book was written last year, 2019, I think. And yet, if it was written about the future is like now. Maurice is such a talented storyteller. He is an attorney or a former attorney in his real life or past life. And so there's shades of biography, I would say here. This is a book. So sometimes I get sent books. Sometimes I buy books. I have bought the hard copy. I've bought the paperback, which I'm holding in my hands, and I have purchased the audiobook. And this book, of all the ones on my list, is one, if you only get one of those, get the audiobook. The voice actor, I think it's a gentleman named Graham, he's terrific. He really nails the story with the inflections of his voice, and he's doing male and female narrations, but he's acting them out. And so I think I mentioned that to Maurice as well, that the book in writing is a terrific read. The book comes to life through the audiobook. It may be my favorite audio version of a book that I have listened to. The book has won all kinds of awards, as it should. We're going to get Maurice on the podcast one of these days. I'm looking on the back, a New York Times Editor's Choice. There were loads of awards here. I had them listed and now I can't find them. It's a great book. We Cast a Shadow by Maurice Carlos Ruffin. Again, I'm not sure that he ever mentions New Orleans in the book, but it's clearly set in New Orleans. And if you live here, if you've been here for any length of time, if you were raised here, you will instantly recognize the kind of themes that he talks about and the struggle of this family who's done well financially and trying to figure out how they fit in and what does that really mean. Again, I can't say enough about Maurice or about the book. Maurice has been so good to so many other authors and has used the success of this book to, I think, to really highlight the talent that is in New Orleans when it comes to writing and telling stories. And I so appreciate all that. Again, I can't wait to get him on the show. But this is a novel that is definitely worth a read. The next novel that's on my list is the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman. It was written by Ernest Gaines in the 1970s, I think. Ernest Gaines passed away fairly recently in the last year. He was, I went to the University of Southwestern Louisiana, USL, and he was the writer, the author in residence. He grew up not far from Lafayette. The autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman is, well, it says it's an autobiography, it's a novel, it's a work of fiction, but it is written from the perspective of a college student who during his break in the 1960s, I think, decides to interview a woman who is a former slave, Jane Pittman. At the time that he interviews her, she's 110 years old. And so the idea of the novel is that it is this sort of series of discussions and interviews that the author had with this person, with Jane Pittman, about her recollections, going back to slavery and then living through the Emancipation Proclamation and Reconstruction and living all the way into the 1960s in this book and kind of all of the things that she lived through and saw. Ernest Gaines was an amazing storyteller. And this book, I think, for a work of fiction, really brings to life so many of the things. Again, if you're a longtime listener, you listen to, hopefully, the episodes we did about Whitney Plantation and about River Road and the plantations there. And as I read this book, I read it again last week. The first time I read it was in high school here in New Orleans, and I read it again last week, and I could just picture River Road and the Whitney Plantation and Oak Alley nearby and Laura Plantation, and could just imagine that the central character, Jane, was talking about any of those or all of them. He really brings his story to life. And again, the book now is, almost 50 years old, I think, but just is really powerful and really moving. And what struck me, and the reason I grouped these two together, is you have this story written 50 years ago, looking back 110 years over how much had changed, and yet some of the things that hadn't changed and some of the struggles that Miss Jane Pittman talks about. And then you have Maurice's book, We Cast a Shadow, that's supposed to be set sometime in the future, 10, 20, 30 years. And yet it feels like it's just a continuation in many ways of the experience that someone that would have lived Jane Pittman's life and then maybe been, say, a grandchild of her, if you would, going forward, some of the same struggles and some of the same themes, and also some of the hopefulness as well. It was my favorite book in high school, and I hadn't touched it again in, 30 years. And last week, I grabbed it and couldn't put it down. So if you haven't read it, The Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman by Ernest Gaines, anything that Ernest Gaines wrote is worth reading. A Lesson Before Dying was a wonderful book as well, but The Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, I cannot recommend it highly enough. Next up, I decided to pick one fiction series. There are so many of them, and there are several written by members of our community, and maybe we'll do a show about that in the future. But I was trying to think, if I was only going to pick one fictional series, what would it be? And what I settled on was the Dave Robichaux series written by James Lee Burke. Burke has written 47 or 48 books, but the Dave Robichaux series, there are 23 of them so far. The very first one was called Neon Rain. It was written in 1987 or 88. And Dave Robichaux, at least in the initial book, Neon Rain, he was a detective for the New Orleans Police Department. He had a partner called Cletus Purcell. And it tells the story, it's a work of fiction, but it tells the story of their adventures and mishaps as detectives. And then as you, again, the books, there's 23 in the series, and if the first one was written in 87, the last one was written in the last 2 years, so spans quite a long time. Like anyone's life, Dave Robichaux, the main character, his life and his circumstances change quite a bit over those decades. One thing that struck me in reading it, and maybe it's because I was putting this list together, I reread that book again in the past 2 weeks, is it was written in the late 80s, and there's terms there that feel really outdated and uncomfortable, and sort of, I couldn't believe that these words were there. In the book, certainly the word Negro is used. Having said that, I think it paints a fair picture and paints a picture of, it's not that long ago that terms like that would have been used here and probably all over. But what I love about James Lee Burke's books is, again, like Ernest Gaines, like Maurice Carlos Ruffin, he has this elegance about the way that he tells a story. They're just sentences that just jump out at me. I also think it gives you kind of a romantic picture of New Orleans a little bit. So if you're missing New Orleans, there's lots of descriptions. Sometimes they miss the mark in the sense of they may not be absolutely geographically accurate, but they do give a good sense. In Neon Rain, he's talking about wandering through the French Quarter near the French Market, I think, at one point. And his description brought me back instantly to being a young child and wandering through that part of the French Quarter. It's a fun series to read. He's a detective, so, there tends to be some murder and intrigue and that sort of thing. But again, if you're looking for a series to read of fiction about New Orleans, I think James Lee Burke is a great place to start in the Dave Robichaux series. with 24 books will keep you busy for a little while at least, and they're easy reads. I've reread two of them again in the last 2 weeks. I am sort of a completist, so if I start on a series, I like to read the entire thing, and sometimes I like to start from the beginning, which is good and bad, but that's a good one. You can pick them up again at the bookstores I've mentioned. You can also easily find, well, at least in New Orleans. I'm not sure about everywhere. You can find them in the libraries. James Lee Burke is on my list of somebody that I would love to interview someday. So if anyone out there has a connection with his people, let me know. There's a whole James Lee Burke festival each year as well. So a good book, good series of books. And they also, through the series, he moves and spends more time in his native New Iberia out near Lafayette. Coincidentally, in the area where Ernest Gaines also grew up. And so it's interesting there. You kind of get a Beyond Bourbon Street, if you will, right? See what I did there? You get exposure to sort of southeast and southwestern Louisiana as well as New Orleans. All right, my voice is fading. We're going to do a few more. Another category I thought particularly right now would be good is children's books. So I asked the kids, who are both asleep now, thankfully, for recommendations, and we have stacks of books about New Orleans, but two that we picked out that we enjoyed. Our kids are now 8 years old, so they don't read these much anymore. But one is Happy Jazz Fest, and the other is Goodnight Nola. They both happen to be written by the same author, Cornell P. Landry, although they were illustrated by different people. But these were books that my kids loved, loved, loved when they were 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. These are the books that you would read to them as opposed to chapter books. I particularly liked picking out Happy Jazz Fest since, again, we are in Jazz Fest season. And it talks about, it's a really, obviously they're kids' books, they're quick reads, but they really tell the story, both in their illustrations and in the story about Jazz Fest. And they do a good job. Even as an adult, you read this and you go, yeah, that would pretty easily, it's a good synopsis of Jazz Fest. I won't read it all to you because that's probably a violation, but at the beginning it says it happens once a year where the ponies usually trot deep down in the city that some say care forgot. And of course, Jazz Fest these days happens on the infield of the fairgrounds racetrack. They cover food, they cover music, they name check several people, they name check several of the tents. It's just a really fun book. And so if you have little ones that love New Orleans, or you want to just sort of share and explain New Orleans, if you're looking for a gift, that's a good one. The other one is Goodnight Nola. Again, also by Cornell Landry, really highlights some of the things. I just randomly opened a page and it says, "Goodnight red beans, goodnight rice." I'm recording this on a Monday and we had red beans and rice for dinner. "Goodnight cathedral, goodnight French Quarter." And so there's lots of that, the kind of just iconic things about New Orleans in kind of a rhyming book. Really, really good books. Can't recommend them enough for gifts for young New Orleanians. And again, I would say anywhere from 2 years old, I guess, when you start reading to the kids, maybe earlier, to it, they held the kids' attention probably through age 6. So say 2 to 6, really good books. Those would be nice pickups, nice gifts for family members or, you know, even baby gifts. Let's see. Number 13 on my list, and I think this is where I'm going to stop for tonight, is a cookbook. Lots of you are home. Apparently, according to social media, lots of people don't know how to cook. Lots of people do know how to cook really well. One of our most often used New Orleans cookbooks is called The New Orleans Cookbook by Richard and Rima Collin. It was written, I think, I don't have that one in front of me, in the 70s or 80s. Richard Collin was the Times-Picayune or the States Item food critic, food writer. A lot of people didn't like him, didn't care for him in that role. But the New Orleans Cookbook is a really good cookbook. It's a paperback. They have many, many recipes and many versions of the same dish. So I think there's 3 or 4 or 5 jambalaya recipes, for instance. I find that the recipes are detailed in that they're instructive, so you can follow them and understand them. I also like with the jambalaya one, ones. I kind of use all three or four as the base when I make a jambalaya and kind of have notes scratched there and mix them up a little bit depending on what we have on hand and my mood. But it's a really good, if you were going to get one cookbook about New Orleans dishes, I would get that one. Again, the New Orleans cookbook, you can find it in paperback. You can find it again locally. I would imagine Blue Cypress has it used fairly often. I would imagine that you can get it at both Octavia and Garden District bookshops. For a while, it was hard to find. It was, I don't know if it was out of print, and I would buy them whenever I could find them online and then just give them as gifts. Probably the best thing I can say about it is that cookbook is probably the most stained cookbook of the whatever dozens we have on the bookshelf in the kitchen. I use it all the time. I used it just the other day. So plenty of good cookbooks, but that's one I recommend often. And in our Facebook group, the Beyond Bourbon Street crew, when people ask for cookbook recommendations, that one's always at the top. I'm going to stop because I'm losing my voice a little bit. I didn't cover, obviously, every possible category of book about New Orleans because there's so many. I intentionally did not cover Katrina-related books. As I was going through the list, I had six or seven, either about Katrina or about the flood of 1927, that I decided there were so many that I thought were worth reading and recommending that I would hold those. And if you guys like this episode, then maybe I'll do one focused just on books related to Katrina. And also a couple of them I haven't read in a while. That still, all these years later, is a hard topic for me, and I did not feel like diving into a half a dozen or more books about Katrina all at once, and certainly not right now with the virus. But it is one that there are many good books written from many different perspectives, so I skipped that intentionally. I didn't mention vampire books, so I kind of skipped categories that I don't have an interest in. I figured I want this to be useful for you all, but I want it to be fun for me, and for whatever reason, the Anne Rice books have just never done it for me. I think they're well done, but I'm not into vampire stories. So there's a lot of, if there's a topic here I didn't cover, it's either because it just didn't make my list this time, or in some cases I'm not that interested in the topic, so I don't know that many books. There is a woman here in New Orleans called named Susan Larson, who hosts a book show called The Reading Life. It's on public radio, and it is also released as a podcast, and she is somebody I need to have on the show and can help me fill in some gaps. I didn't cover books that I haven't read yet that are on my list. So one of the real benefits of doing this podcast is I get lots of books. Now, I buy a lot of books, but I also get a lot of books sent to me. I don't talk about the book unless I've read the book, and I generally like to have read it recently. And so I have a whole stack that I am dying to jump into. One thing this episode's done is I think I've read 7 books in 2 weeks, which I haven't done in many, many, many years. And so thank you for that. Because prepping some of these books I wanted to reread, I don't think there's any book that I read for the first time in the last couple weeks. But so there are plenty more books, and I know that I'm going to get flooded with, well, why didn't you talk about this book or this book? And I have lots of friends who are authors, again, that they'll make it into a future episode, assuming you guys decide that you like this episode. So, you know, there's plenty more. I just wanted to give you a handful, about a dozen, that you could either use as gifts or read yourself or do both. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope that you found some new books to read or to give as gifts or both, like I said. If you want to buy from local New Orleans bookshops, I recommend Octavia Books and Garden District Bookshop. If you're in New Orleans and you want to buy used books, call Blue Cypress. Right now, they, and I think the others as well, are doing local deliveries or free deliveries over a certain amount. And if you do go to any of those three, let them know that you heard about their bookstores on Beyond Bourbon Street. All three would make great partners for the show, and I think would be good fits for you. You're listening to the show because you want something off the beaten path. And I think indie bookshops are so important, and those three are terrific. I'd love to have them as partners. I'll put links to their websites in the show notes today. But again, if you buy anything or you reach out to them, let them know that you heard about it from Mark at Beyond Bourbon Street.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.